Get your favorite beverage ready. It's time for the Peachtree Hoops Podcast.
Welcome to Peachtree Hoops. My name is Phil Nasons, and I'm the co-host of this weekly Atlanta Hawks-based radio show. Joining me, as always, is my co-host. Please welcome Chris Willis to the show. What's happening, dude? It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, Phil. I appreciate you doing this, and it's good to be back. A lot of things happening in the Hawks world right now, so it'll be fun to talk about them.
Absolutely, it will be. Travis Schlenk. That's an interesting name. He's the new general manager of the Hawks.
Yeah, that's the biggest domino to fall since I think you and I last got together. It came about pretty quickly. I thought they did a pretty good job with the search. Saw a lot of names out there. But I was pretty happy with the hire. And I thought he said a lot of good things in that introductory press conference on Friday. So he comes from a winning program. And I think that's important. He comes from the Warriors. He's got a lot of experience there. He was there when they built that championship team. And I've had to remind a couple of people this week, that team was good. From Durant on there, I think that's important to note. They started, kind of as a low playoff team and built their way up. And I think that's kind of impressive. And more importantly, I feel like, they play a style of basketball that's a lot similar to the way Mike Budenholzer likes to play. So I think there's going to be some common ground there in regards to the type of players that a guy like Schlenk will like and Bud will like those same guys. So, a lot of good things. Finally, a little bit of excitement, for what seems like it's just been a dull season for Atlanta in general.
It would have been more exciting if they would have named me as the general manager.
Yeah, I agree.
I just want to get that out there. I'm disappointed that I was not hired. I have a better plan than he does. I don't have as much experience as he does, but then again, I don't think experience is going to matter too much. The one thing that interests me, Tony Ressler claimed that he didn't bring Schlenk in for Ressler to make basketball decisions. Now, just a few weeks shy of this, he said that the buck stops with him.
Yeah, and he also, at that same interview, said that there wouldn't be any front office changes. So, here we are. So, I loved what I heard yesterday at the presser, and I think they said all the right things, Tony Ressler included. But, it's right now, it's all kind of – I don't feel bad saying this. It's lip service. You've got to go out and actually execute that stuff. And, but it is kind of a 180 turn from what we heard from Ressler in that interview with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. But, I do think it's interesting that the prevailing theme of that press conference yesterday was, I think there was two things, actually. It was, they talked about collaboration and how important that was. And, I think overemphasized how Bud's going to be involved, because that is a delicate situation, because now technically Schlenk is making the decisions, and in charge of the guy who was running the whole operation, this time last year. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, because I think they think alike. That'll remains to be seen. But from all indications, that's the way it kind of makes you feel. The elephant in the room is Schlenk going to be allowed to do his job, to execute this plan? And, I think you and I can get into some of the particulars he said about building a championship club. I found those interesting too, but, I think that's the point. Management's going to have to give him the tools to be successful, and then get out of the way and let him do those things. And I think that's important for Schlenk, but that's important for every GM, every president of basketball operations in the league. And I don't really think it probably matters what sport you're in. I think that's just something that has to be in place, for a team to be successful.
That makes sense. Now, he did say that no bad contracts. Now, he's already got a couple of them right now. Does that mean he's not bringing Paul Millsap back?
Yeah, I mean, that was the crazy thing about the whole press conference. And I was tweeting a little bit, some of my thoughts out during that. I know Brad was as well. But, you know, he gave three things, basically, that you had to do if you're going to be a championship-level club and you want to sustain it. You had to have flexibility. You had to accumulate assets, and you had to develop your players. And, the Hawks have done a really excellent job of developing players. That's young players. That's veterans. Paul Millsap's a perfect example of a veteran that came there. Damari Carroll, Kent Bazemore, came to Atlanta as role players and developed into guys that, got significant NBA contracts, Carroll from the Raptors and, of course, Bazemore from Atlanta. And then your young guys, you've got Dennis Schroeder, you've got Taurean Prince, you've got Tim Hardaway Jr., who's another great example. And then from the asset standpoint, the Hawks have 11 picks over the next three seasons. Now, I'm a little skeptical of how big assets some of those really are, because a lot of those are second-round picks. But that's better than having no picks. And you can ask people from Brooklyn, or
Memphis
to vouch for that. So, that is a good thing as well. But the flexibility part, I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle, because right now they're not flexible. The only way they gain flexibility is to move on from Paul Millsap, or they can trade one of the existing big contracts that is on the their cap sheet now, most notably Dwight Howard, Kent Bazemore. That may be easier said than done. I found that interesting. He doubled back after the press conference, told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and some other outlets that, he wants to bring Paul Millsap back, which that was also something that ownership had previously stated. I believe the exact quote was, any mean imaginable to bring Paul Millsap back, was the quote, was something to that effect that Tony Ressler said. So, that's going to be interesting. I don't see how this team's going to get flexible. Yes, there is a young core. I've had that pointed out to me. They do have a number of young players and have three picks in this draft. But there's a lot of money tied up in Dwight Howard, Kent Bazemore. And if they keep Paul Millsap, a lot of money there, and then we haven't even talked about Tim Hardaway Jr. yet. So, I think that's the biggest hurdle, and I think that's going to be the most difficult decision he probably has to make this summer.
They don't get to keep both of them. If you're going to develop your own players, it would seem to lead to the logical conclusion that they're going to walk away from Paul Millsap and bring back Tim Hardaway Jr. Now, I suppose they could have both of them if they got rid of Dwight Howard's contract, right?
Yeah, I mean, that opens up a completely different set of possibilities. I mean, it's kind of open-ended. The Hardaway thing is interesting because they already spent heavily on Kent Bazemore. Now, Bazemore can play the small forward. He's done that. But as he gets older, I question whether his best position is probably the shooting guard spot. Hardaway, I've talked about at length, and I think we're going to talk a little bit more about him on this podcast. But I mean, he's, in my opinion, a great scorer. But I think his ceiling's probably as a sixth man scoring guard on a good team. And I don't know that that's something you really want to tie a lot of money up in. But it is interesting. And one thing, the other kind of thing I underlined from that press conference, Schlink was asked about the luxury tax. And if the Hawks bring everybody back, if they double down on this group as 43-win team, they're going to be bumping right up against the tax. And I thought this was interesting. He said that Schlink said that he didn't think it made sense to pay the tax for a team that's going to be battling for an eighth seed or a seventh seed. And, and I thought that was interesting, especially given the situation and everything. So that kind of lends me to think they're not for doubling down on this roster. That doesn't mean that they're going to trade Dwight Howard. That doesn't mean they're not going to bring back Paul Millsap, but they could look to move, you know, some of the other pieces somewhere. And so that's going to be, you know, that'll be interesting to keep an eye on this summer.
You're not going to double down on this team. You'd have to be crazy to do that. You're not going to win more than 43 games. Dwight Howard's not interested. And Paul Millsap, I don't even think he wants to come back. Would you?
I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, the Millsap debate, I think it's a fascinating subject because, I mean, on one hand, here's a guy who, I mean, his first contract in Atlanta was criminal. I mean, that was one of the most unsung contracts. I mean, Danny Ferry produced, you know, a two-year deal. I believe it was $19 million. And even if Paul Millsap was just Utah Paul Millsap, that contract was a steal. And then he developed into what is now a four-time All-Star. I mean, I could see such a scenario because Paul Millsap was so underpaid early in his career. He likes it in Atlanta. He likes playing for Mike Budenholzer. I could see a situation where he says, okay, I'm going to cash in right here, and he stays. But at the same time, I think Paul Millsap wants to win. You know, I think he desires winning as well. And, you know, he might, you know, that could pick his interest, you know, elsewhere. I think it's an interesting thing. I think there's some common ground for us. I don't think a five-year max is definitely a priority. I think Paul will definitely receive some four-year max offers. So, you know, I think Atlanta's probably going to have to get in that neighborhood if they want to keep him. But, you know, that's one of those tough decisions. And it's like I told you before, I love watching Paul Millsap, and I cannot imagine watching this Hawks team this year without Paul Millsap. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in next year's team if Paul Millsap's not on it. But at the same time, I'm not real sure it's the right decision for a franchise that wants to – the ultimate goal is to win a championship, is to give a four-year max offer, near max offer, to a guy that's already 32 years old. I just don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense.
You're going to become the Knicks of the South.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what you need to guard against. You know, you need to look at the overall situation. That's why so many of us, you know, suggested this team should have broken itself up at the trade deadline, accumulated more of those assets that Travis Schlink was talking about. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't our decision to make. And they made the decision. They stuck with it. You know, they finished with the fifth seed, albeit at 43 wins. And, you know, they got beat in the first round of the playoffs. And now that set the table for this summer. And they've got a lot of interesting decisions they're going to have to make.
I don't know. You know, it is what it is. But Matt Moore, a couple weeks ago, on Twitter, he had a poll on who had more value, and he named three forwards, guys who will be free agents who will command some bucks. Blake Griffin was in the poll, Paul Millsap was in the poll, and Gordon Hayward was in the poll. And guess what, man? You know what? Who do you think is the one that got voted the lowest?
Oh, probably Paul Millsap, if I'm guessing.
By a long rate.
I am cheating a little bit because I've got the tweet open here, but because you sent me a link. But
right.
You know, I mean, my first thought is how do you lump Gordon Hayward in there with two power forwards? But, you know, I mean, I agree with the poll. I mean, I think at this point, Gordon Hayward's probably got more value right now because of his age. He seems to be, you know, coming into his own as not quite an all NBA performer because there's a lot of competition there, but just right knocking on the door. And, you know, and that Utah team was really good. Now, you know, I'm kind of a little bit of a skeptic with Blake Griffin. I'm not surprised by the poll results. Blake Griffin got 15%. Paul Millsap got 5%. I think Blake Griffin probably should be valued a little higher than Millsap at this point, just simply because of his age. But that gap, you know, Paul Millsap's the kind of guy you have to watch him for 82 games to appreciate it. You know, you can't tune in to the Hawks sporadically once or twice and, you know, and understand just how valuable and how good Paul Millsap is. Same things we used to say about Al Horford. And, you know, so I'm not surprised at all that of the results of this poll, you know, just for the name factor alone. I mean, Paul Millsap's, I won't call him a boring player, but you know, he's not stealing headlines from anybody. But I think the people that really, really understand the game and really, really, you know, understand how things work really appreciate a guy like Paul Millsap over even a guy like Blake Griffin.
Well, if you've ever followed Matt Moore, I do, obviously. He's a friend of this show's and he's a friend of whatever we do. The thing is he has a lot of oddballs that follow him. So it doesn't surprise me that they would vote Paul Millsap that low. And I echo what you say. You know, you have to watch him every night to appreciate him. I guarantee you that if this was a general manager's poll, it might be different. I would say that Paul Millsap has probably more immediate value, not long-term, because he's not going to play. He's not going to play the way he is now 5 years from now, probably. But I would take Paul Millsap over Blake Griffin in a heartbeat. And I would take Paul Millsap over Gordon Hayward in a heartbeat. And here's why. Because I know what I'm getting every single night from Paul Millsap. Even Gordon Hayward lays eggs and goes in these ugly-looking slumps. I think it has to do with where he played. Who did he play college basketball for again? Remind me. Oh, that kid in Boston. All right. Okay. So I would take Paul Millsap over all three of those guys. But that being said, I would only do it if I was in a win now mode because Paul Millsap's window is closing. Man, I tell you what, he'd look good in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform. He'd look good in most uniforms.
Yeah. And I think that's the important. I think that's the important thing. I mean, he can fit in. You know, I don't feel like he's a product of the way the Hawks play. I think he can fit in a lot of situations. And I think he showed that. And his versatility on defense is probably still his most underrated, you know, the underrated aspect of his game. I mean, we've seen this guy guard small forwards. We've seen this guy guard centers, you know, and do a good job of it. And, I mean, he and Horford together, you know, that was amazing. It was amazing to watch every night how they covered things up. And it came at a price. It comes at a price of sacrificing a few rebounding position a lot of times. And, you know, that had its negative effects. But, you know, overall, you know, it was something else to watch. But, you know, I'm a fan of Gordon Hayward. I think this guy's going to be really, really good. You know, I'm kind of hoping he stays in Utah because I really like that team. But, you know, Blake Griffin, I mean, when his athleticism starts to go, I question just how effective he's going to be. And, you know, the fact that it's not any fault of his. Well, it seems like one injury was a fault of his. But most of the time, you know, he just has this knack for getting hurt at the worst times. And, you know, I think I'd be a little leery giving him a big long contract because of that.
Well, I hear you there. You know, Blake Griffin is playing farther and farther away from the rim every season. You know, you need your guys to mix it up. And rebounding isn't everything. Just ask the Cleveland Cavaliers, who out-rebounded Golden State and still lost. So that's been said. But I'm a guy. I'm a Paul Millsap guy. I always have been. I think Gordon Hayward, I hope he stays in Utah. I like that Utah team. I always have. But they've had that injury bug, too. And Gordon Hayward might want to go somewhere else, like where it's warm, where they don't pay taxes or state taxes, sort of like, I don't know, Miami? I don't see him going to Boston.
I think Boston will come after him hard, you know, and I think it's an interesting situation there because, I mean, I believe I can't remember whose podcast I heard this on. I'm pretty sure it was Zach Lowe, but I can't remember who the guest was that brought this up. But, you know, I believe Gordon's at 7 years in the league. So in 3 years, he'll be eligible for that larger contract that I can't remember if they call it Supermax now or what. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, he can sign a longer, more lucrative deal in Utah. But, you know, if he wants to take a risk with an opt out or something, you know, to get back in the free agency there right at the 10-year mark, you know, we could see, you know, that can impact negatively the advantage Utah has on some of these other teams. And I expect a lot of those other teams to sell that hard, you know, to him. So that's going to be interesting to see. I think it's important that Utah had some success this year, you know, and it would be a blow to their rebuilding, you know, to lose him at this point, because it's just really hard to find dynamic wings. You know, and I think Atlanta is a perfect example of that. They've kind of been searching for one ever since Damari Carroll left, and maybe they finally found it in Taurean Prince.
Well, I think they did find it in Taurean Prince, but you know, you bring up Damari Carroll, he hasn't been healthy since he left Atlanta.
No, and I mean, I still feel like Damari Carroll was kind of the guy, you know, I questioned it that year. I wondered, you know, just how effective is Damari going to be, you know, if he's not in Atlanta and not in that system. And I think he, you know, we talked about this with Kent Bazemore. I think Damari really benefited from that ball movement. I think it opened up cutting lanes for him. I think it opened up wide open shots for him. He was playing very confidently. And, you know, I think Ballman was not the same in Toronto because you've got Kyle Lowry pounding the ball. You've got DeMar DeRozan pounding the ball. So I'm not really surprised a whole lot that DeMar's not looked like the same player. And I think, you know, Kent Bazemore, I think you and I have pointed this out too. I think lack of ball movement for this year's Hawks hurt Kent Bazemore as much as it did any player on the roster.
And the same thing with the defensive end too, the lack of flexibility. You know, Damari Carroll had to work a lot harder in Toronto than he did in Atlanta. You know, when they were winning 60 games, that team was fluid on both sides of the floor. And this team, this last season, wasn't very fluid. So let's hope that that comes back. But Tim Hardaway Jr., we were going to talk about this 2 weeks ago, and the recorder went to crap. Why is he so darn polarizing? I don't get it. I mean, I really don't get it. I'm a Knicks fan. I've watched every single game this kid has played in the NBA, and I still don't get it. Why do these people go gaga over Tim Hardaway Jr.?
It's Tim Hardaway is a fascinating story, I think, for the especially during his tenure in the Atlanta Hawks, because, you know, and I'm going to try to remember some of the points we raised a couple of weeks ago. I may not get them all back because I thought we had a good discussion on this. But, you know, you got to remember that 60-win season, one of the remarkable things about that was the Hawks had this pick that they had the rights to, as a leftover of the Joe Johnson trade, they had rights left to swap with Brooklyn, you know, first-round pick, similar to what Boston did. Now, unfortunately for Atlanta, Brooklyn rallied late in that year and made the playoffs. And actually played the Hawks pretty well in the first round, you know. And so that pick ended up being 15th. So it had been hyped all year. You know, they still had a decent team then. It wasn't quite like what Boston benefited from this season. But that pick swap, you know, it was a big hyped thing. And then to get into the draft, and then to trade down and then to ultimately, you know, send that to New York and, you know, get ridiculed for acquiring Tim Hardaway Jr. I mean, I remember Knicks writers tweeting out that night that they didn't think the Knicks could have gotten a second round pick from Tim Hardaway Jr., much less a first round pick. You know, so, I mean, it was met with a ton of ridicule from day one, you know, because that was a hyped addition. I mean, for a long time, it looked like the Hawks were going to get a lottery pick out of that, and they ended up just outside the lottery. But
right.
So, you know, I think that was one thing. Then it, you know, kind of hit rock bottom when the next season, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't open in the rotation. He opens on an active list. He ends up in the D League. You know, and I think it was a real source of a sore spot for this fan base on a lot of levels. And then, you know, he came around in the second half of that season, started to play well. I think his game is appealing to a lot of fans. A lot of the one-on-one basketball you don't see anymore. You didn't see as much with the Hawks. You saw the athleticism, which the Hawks didn't have a whole lot of. You know, and he had this ability to just go crazy. You know, hit 7, 8, 9 shots, get red hot. And we saw that a lot this season. So, I mean, it's been like an up and down pendulum swing, the support or the angst with Tim Hardaway Jr. And it's been fascinating to watch. I mean, even this season, he goes to preseason, he goes 3 for 30. I'm getting tweets saying he needs to be the odd man out on the roster, you know, and then turned out, you know, a few months in, he looked like the team's best player other than Paul Millsap. So, you know, I think it is fascinating. I think he has become polarizing. And, you know, my fear, and I don't want to talk too much here, but my fear is he's a really nice player when he's making $2.5 million, kind of the same situation Kent Bazemore is. You know, if he's comes back to Atlanta making 12, what's the fan reaction going to be when he can't guard anybody or he can't, you know, he has a prolonged shooting slump. I think it's going to make him even more polarizing. But yeah, I mean, that was a great topic because it has been, it's been wild. It's been a pendulum swing from one extreme to the other, you know, in just a short period of time.
Well, I had a Knicks guy telling me they had to get rid of him because they wanted to keep Derek Fisher and they didn't have a choice, and they didn't think they could get even what they got for him. So they were very happy about that. That pick turned into Kelly Oubre, by the way, and I don't know who you'd rather have, I suppose, but I don't know how Kelly Oubre would fit in with the Hawks either. You just don't know. I mean, Dwight Howard gave you a snapshot of it when he let him dunk on him in the first round of the playoffs. But you know something, Tim Hardaway Jr., I'm one of those guys, by the way. I didn't tweet you. I said it on this show. They need to cut him and cut their losses. and the truth is, you know something? He's appealing to me anyway. He's more appealing, I guess. If you're playing at LA Fitness, this is kind of like the player that you have out there. You know, they get hot and they get hot, don't play defense, keep shooting, and then throw up a whole bunch of bricks. That resembles a lot of the people's games in their own lives, so they figure this is okay. In the NBA, it doesn't work. Sixth man of the year, I thought he should have been at least a candidate, but then Zach Randolph wasn't. Zach Randolph had a better year than Tim Hardaway Jr. A lot of people had a better year than Tim Hardaway Jr. That being said, $2.5 million, that's the thing you said on the last time we did this. At $2.5 million, it's a nice player. At $12 million, or I don't see him getting 12, but even at $8 million, that's too much. He's not worth it because he's not going to get any better. He's not going to get any more consistent. He's hit his ceiling. He's going to have those nights when it goes in, and he's going to have a lot more nights when it don't. And do you want that? Do the Atlanta Hawks want that? That's the most important thing. I would have to say no. But the polarizing, it just blows my mind. And fellow Knicks fans of mine and people who cover the Knicks are just as amazed as I am that anybody would give two hoots about Tim Hardaway Jr. other than his parents.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to add, too, and I mean, I thought this was fascinating. I mean, that night at the draft, I mean, the Hawks were just getting ridiculed, hammered on Twitter, all these Knicks writers. And one of those same Knicks writers this year, I believe it was after Tim Hardaway Jr. had that explosion against the Rockets in the fourth quarter, scored 25. So I don't remember. It was ridiculous. They came all the way back, you know, and won. And I remember one of those same Knicks riders ripped Phil Jackson that night because he traded Tim Hardaway Jr. And I'm like, come on. I mean, really? Do you guys not remember what you said 2 years ago? But that was, I just found that funny. And it's not just Atlanta fans. It will swing, the pendulum swings with him. But, you know, his story, and it was no fault of his own. I mean, you know, he came into Atlanta. The Hawks liked him. He acquired him. You know, was the price too high? I don't know. You know, you remember they traded down. Washington took Oubre, and then they, you know, traded, made the deal with the Knicks. And I believe it was the point guard from Notre Dame that's actually with the Bulls right now that I can't think of his name, but who the Knicks picked. But, you know, you just don't know. I mean, we hype these draft prospects. We're doing it right now. You know, you get attached to these guys. You don't really know what the teams, how the teams feel about them. You know, so I think it's always been an interesting dynamic, especially when you're picking outside the lottery, because I think that's where things, it kind of gets wide. You know, and when you're in the lottery, there's usually a set of names and a pecking order established. But, you know, a lot of years, once you get outside the lottery, you know, there may be 30 names for those last 15 spots.
I still remember that, dude. Yeah, I was covering the Knicks. And I remember this very vividly. I was at Barclays Center. That was the same night that the fans and the reporters killed the Porzingis pick. I mean, look, don't pay attention to New York media. they say whatever they want to say, whatever they want to say, depending on how they feel. And I know who that was, by the way. And I could say some things right now, but at the end of the day, I don't bring this kid back over $5 million. I can't do that. If you want to talk about being no bad contracts, having flexibility, and accumulating assets, I don't think Tim Hardaway Jr. is an asset you want to accumulate for more than $5 million
a year. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the price tag will be. I mean, he's restricted. That kind of helps the Hawks in this situation because somebody will have to, you know, make he can have they can have his value gauged, you know, out there on the open market. But you know, I mean, when you talk flexibility, and again, you know, we have to see the Hawks do something to become flexible, because right now they're not. And, you know, I think that's pointing out they can talk about wanting to be flexible. But if they go out and give Paul Millsap a max contract and they bring back Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, it's lip service because they're not going to be flexible for until Howard and Bazemore come off the cap sheet. You know, so, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see. But I mean, that's the thing. When you look up and down this roster, you know, Dennis Schroeder's extension is going to kick in. Well, I don't think they would think about moving him. You know, he looks like he's entrenched as the team's starting point guard. And to me, he probably appears the safest player on the roster. But, you know, when you get right down to it, if they want to get flexible, somebody's got to go. And, you know, I don't know if that's Millsap. I don't know if that's Hardaway. I don't know, you know, Jettison and Hardaway is probably not going to clear up a lot, especially if you bring back Paul. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of tough decisions. And then you've got to factor in what is Kent Bazemore's value? What is Dwight Howard's value? Can they, you know, can they get something back? Can they, you know, I mean, it's just a lot of moving parts. And, you know, they're going to have to really, Travis Schlink's going to have to really evaluate the situation and try to figure out what direction to go in.
I hope he already started before he got hired, because we're going to be on his ass next year if he doesn't. Here's what they could do. I thought about this yesterday, by the way. I haven't worked it all the way out, but bringing Paul Millsap back and then trading him in January. He could get his money and go play for a good team, and they could acquire assets with him. You know, that's what the Warriors did with Monte Ellis, and traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut, and I can't remember who. Oh, it was the pick for Klay Thompson. Turned into Klay Thompson, I think. But they needed to get somebody out of the way in order for the young guy, Steph Curry, to take over. And after that happened, it was all uphill for the Warriors. And we saw a lot of evidence of that on Thursday night. 113-91. It wasn't even close, man. I saw a tweet you made. You really don't care for my wallet, do you? I need to work this out for two more weeks, dude.
Yeah, no.
I get laid off. I'm off as soon as they lose.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I don't think this series is over. You know, I've steadfastly pulled against Cleveland for a long time, but I don't feel like this series is over. I expect game two to be, you know, pretty competitive, and I think it better be for Cleveland. I don't think they necessarily even have to win it. But I don't think they need to get blowed out in this, you know, because I'm not sure they're coming back from 3-1 this time. You know, because Warriors with Durant healthy, that's going to be a tall task. But you know, we'll see what happens in game two. You know, it certainly shocked a lot of people. I saw a lot of people picking the Cavs in seven, and I don't think you should feel bad about that pick. But I think that blowout just kind of shook everybody a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see. It's interesting to see how Cleveland LeBron respond in game two.
Yeah, Cleveland LeBron. That's how you put it too, because that's about right. You know what? Here's the deal. If you have 20 turnovers, commit 20 turnovers, and shoot 34% from the floor, you're not going to beat the Washington Nationals, the team that plays against the Harlem Globetrotters. I mean, that's just the way it is. They played awful. All of them did. Kevin Durant played good, but don't forget, folks, there's a reason that their own beat writers in Oklahoma City referred to him often as Mr. Unreliable. He might play good in games one and two, but after that, when things start to get dicey, I think he has issues, but I think the Billy Goat chin of his, it starts to curl the other way, and I think he gets nervous. That's what I think. I think it's going to be over with quick, though, because I don't see Cleveland coming back from it. Kyrie Irving's not a superstar. The fans are going bananas. They're crazier than some of the Hawks fans I've dealt with in my lifetime or my last 2 years. And
they should be. They've actually won a championship, you know. But, I mean, you look at that. I mean, you hit it on the head. I mean, everybody wanted to talk about Cleveland's defense the other night. But, you know, you can't turn the ball over 20 times against the Warriors, especially live ball turnovers, because you're just asking for trouble. They move the ball too well. They're going to run the break. They're going to find somebody open. And more than likely, that person's going to make the shot. So, I mean, they're just playing with fire. You can't do that. But I expect the Cavs. I expect the Cavs to respond. They've got the greatest player in the world for a reason. And, I just think I think Warriors win this series 5-6 games. But, I think we're going to have some good games before it's over.
Well, let's hope. You know, one of the things they better do is slow down that pace. The Cavs better control the pace, because you get in that kind of running game with the Warriors and it's church, finito, bust out the coffin. And if I hear one more time that Kyrie Irving is a superstar, I'm going to weep uncontrollably. Chris, this has been fun as always. I think the recorder worked. I think we're in good shape. We've got one more week before, because the Cavs are going to screw me up and I'm going to have to go a week early to camp. But we got one more show after this, partner. Well done.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right.
Appreciate you doing this.
I appreciate doing it with you. I appreciate the opportunity you've given me. For Chris Willis, I'm Phil Nasis. We want to thank you, as always, for listening to Peachtree Hoops.